J7. Number 4B.
All right, so we begin our journey on the ascending way, and we now are going to look at point one. All is mental. And I will just show you how one can find the information to help oneself with this study. First of all, as I said, we want to take as our basic text Kapler's book, then, The Ordered Approach, and this subject, as I've built up to it, starts then on page 3 in the booklet, starting with, under the subject, the 8 steps to the oneness of being. All the points before I've already covered within the framework of the class. So starting on page 3, then, we would take the booklet, and always just using it as a guide, always can supplement it with his, as I mentioned, his introductory book or his book on the synonyms. He has taken this subject up in many other places. For example, not only what I've given you in the handout, but if you look in our handout on the second page from the study aid, on the back of that second page, it shows all the different places you can find this subject, help to the subject on the order approach. For example, it gives here references from the Max's Level book, pages 7 to 9 or 55 to 59. His cassettes on the 4 levels of science or practical implications. D2 covers the subject. Another set of cassettes on the fundamentals of Christian Science, cassette numbers, that would be in the series B2 in the tape catalog, cassette number 23, and so on and so on, showing various places that we can supplement this booklet on the ordered approach, along with the books I mentioned, to fill in what he's given, because he has just a short paragraph on the first step, all is mental, and this covers volumes of information that one could use in gaining the letter, in gaining the concept, and then the tonality. Just for example, I have shown therefore here that all is mental is really, I will ask, as you'll see as we go along, I'm going to set up a certain type of, I'll show usually 3 big points, especially as we go on, I may bring in more, but I'll always ask of each step a point one. What is reality to step one? That's what you want to do. Just what is step one telling us? What is reality to step one? And then the next question I will ask of step one is, how can I become one with the reality of step one? So the same questions we're asking in a big general way, we can ask specifically to step one. So what is reality to the standpoint of the fact that all is mental? And how can I become one with the standpoint that all is mental? And then, what is the pitfall of step one? Meaning, why isn't it the highest step in our ascendancy of being? Why do we have another step two, or a step three, or a step four? So those are the big points. So first of all, what is reality to step one? Well, reality to step one is that all is mental. Well, we can see already today that in the world, so many of the various thinkers are talking about the mental nature of the universe. We always like to maybe go back to examples maybe in physics where they see right around Einstein's time when Lincoln Barnett wrote that book, The Universe and Dr. Einstein, where they began to see that the various philosophers and scientists were reducing the physical universe just to qualities of space and time and matter. And they began to see, gee, that all those really are qualities of our thinkings, quality of our concepts. So finally in that book, The Universe and Dr. Einstein, Lincoln Barnett says, "Thus the philosophers and scientists have arrived at the startling conclusion that the whole objective universe of matter and energy and atoms in the stars," he says, it does not exist except as the construction of consciousness, an edifice of conventional symbols shaped by the senses of man. Doesn't exist except the way we've been educated through our symbols, and hence it's all mental because it's just the way we've been educated through symbols to see the world. That he wrote that back when in 1947, I believe. So one can give over and over, and the one, of course, Dorley and Max have always liked to quote was Sir James Jeans, that the universe seems like a big thought. He was a physicist rather than matter. And over, especially today, the many physicists and scientists that are all talking about the mental nature of universe. Now, Mrs. Eddy certainly knew this and saw this. It was part of her revelation, where she saw then that mortal mind evolves a subjective state of mortal mind called matter. She reduced everything down to mortal mind, which was shutting out, remember, her real view of the spirit. She says, well, what's shutting out the spiritual realm is just mortal mind's educated beliefs in matter. And I had to set my thought to work in new channels in the revelation, and I saw that all was mind and its idea. And so in Kapler's book on the introduction to the science of Christian Science, he gives a wonderful, on pages 83 to 96, he gives, and I'm only going to go over the outline because I'm setting up how you work with this in your workshop and with yourself and others, is that he shows 7 points I'd like to have you go over. Again, to repeat, his introduction to the science of Christian Science, pages 83 to 96. In my introductory class in 75, I spent quite a long time going over this very important point. I have it on the screen, and I'm just going to talk over it in general. But point one, he shows in the book, this is taken right from his book, he says, point one, what is the basis of mortal consciousness? And he says, mortal consciousness is a collective name for all beliefs, for everything which does not derive from God. Well, we've seen that. It's going outside the focal point of spirit. And God being the 7 synonyms for God. Therefore, mortal consciousness is based on, as Mrs. Eddy shows, mortal mind and its erroneous concepts of matter, physical corporeal senses, human theories and doctrines, finite views of life, error, lies, and imperfection. In a nutshell, mortal consciousness is based on the beliefs of the second record of creation, which are just erroneous, false beliefs educated into what we call mortal mind. Therefore, mortal mind is the culprit. Remember always that key in metaphysics, huh? That beliefs cause sickness. The big point over and over of medicine in the 6th chapter, as I've said already, it's false beliefs that objectify themselves as sickness. Once the false belief is gone, the sickness leaves. So therefore, point two, he shows that mortal mind brings forth all in harmony. Point three, we have different forms of mortal mind or mortal consciousness. What makes up mortal consciousness called mortal mind? A lot more than meets the eye. In fact, what meets the eye is only 10% of what really constitutes mortal consciousness. Mrs. Eddy showed, and then it was actually verified through the work of Carl Jung, also in the world and working with mental and psychology, but Mrs. Eddy showed way before that mortal consciousness is filled with individual beliefs. These are all the personal beliefs that we have as individuals, but our mortal consciousness is also filled, and to the greater extent, with beliefs shared by groups of people, collected bodies of thought, such as those beliefs of a race, of a nation, of a culture, of a religion, of being a man or a woman or a child. All those beliefs are within consciousness. And mortal consciousness is made up of universal beliefs, beliefs which do not only apply to individuals or special groups, but to the mortal universe in general. Huh? These are the beliefs that affect every life form on Earth. And those beliefs are beliefs of sin, sickness, death, age, decay, heredity, catastrophe, cosmic influence. And Kapler goes on to show then, as you'll see, and those beliefs operate probably, one just guessing, but in a general way, 10% of those are conscious beliefs, beliefs that we are aware of. But the majority of them, as Mrs. Eddy shows, are beneath the surface in the subconscious or unconscious realm. That we consciously experience only a small percentage of what goes on in consciousness. She shows that the greater part of these beliefs lie dormant in the unconscious, and hence we call them dangerous. Because images and forces, Kapler says, unknown to us, which have been latent for years in the subconscious, may suddenly surface, and with an impact which conscious mind cannot understand and is not equipped to deal with. This is what then Mrs. Eddy saw so clearly, that these unconscious beliefs, as she says here in Science and Health, page 408, mortal mind is ignorant of itself, ignorant of the errors it includes and of their effect. That's that bigger, and that's what Carl Jung showed into the psychological field, just what Mrs. Eddy had shown before him in the spiritual realm, talking about the mental realm, Mrs. Eddy, and talking about the mental realm of which Carl Jung investigated. He also says that those universal beliefs control the mental, control the collective belief, control the individual belief, and he went on to set up his whole theory of psychology through dreams. Letting those beliefs he feels would surface through dreams, and he would try to interpret those universal beliefs that are affecting our life through our various dreams, and he would say those are universal and collective beliefs, are archetypal beliefs that were there since the beginning of time, beliefs that the cavemen thought and our ancestors, are all within the collective unconscious, which is just sent on through the code of life. And Mrs. Eddy said the same thing in the mental. She says, yeah, that's right. That's what the problem are these false beliefs that keep objectifying themselves. If they were conscious, we would handle them. But because they're unconscious, dormant, they keep springing forward, and we say, where did this illness come from? I didn't think of it. Well, the race may have thought about it as a claim against our race, or the nation may have thought about it. In general, the universal false belief may have thought about it, and it springs forward on us. And I said, well, I always been studying Christian Science, and suddenly here there's a sickness. It's because somewhere the standard has been let down from focusing on perfection, on the calculus of ideas, on absolute Christian Science, and we've let the door open. Maybe not for ourselves, but by watching television, just saying, gee, that's too bad that all those people, you know, they really are sick and they really have all those colds and flu that's going around. I'm sure glad I study Christian Science and I don't have it. See, it's accepting it for the universal claim. Is accepting it for us. Yes. It can get in the door by all sorts of little tricky ways, of which we have to, we'll see, Mrs. Eddy says, stand porter at the door of thought. If you accept it for yourself, you're accepting it for the collective and universal. You've let the false belief in. So one has to handle these beliefs through science, of course. But this is the first step, which is just letting us see they're there. Then, of course, Mrs. Eddy Max goes on and shows point 4, that mortal consciousness is not personal. as he says, he said, mortals did not wish nor create mortal consciousness. But the reverse is true. Impersonal mortal mind creates mortals. The false education is the problem. And Mrs. Eddy says, and this is the main point, this is terrific in retrospection, introspection, the key to this metaphysics and Christian Science. She says, sin existed as a false claim before the human concept of sin was formed. Hence, one's concept of error is not the whole of error. The human thought does not constitute sin, but vice versa. Sin constitutes the human or physical concept. So as we go down, she says, in retrospection on the page, it says, the sinner created neither himself nor sin, but sin created the sinner. The sinner is merely a tool of impersonal mortal mind. It springs up on him and thinks him. That's why the fellow on death row who could be condemned as such a quote-unquote sinner is in reality the Son of God as everyone else. It's just that he or she has just been weak to these false beliefs, hasn't been educated on how to handle error through science. And so therefore those thoughts think him rather than God thinking him. Those, the first degree is thinking him or her. Point five. Immortal consciousness, the greater controls the lesser. Oh, this is Mrs. Eddy says, shows us so beautifully over and over and over in her work. How the majority of beliefs govern the minority of beliefs. That's, as I said, how the universal belief governs, the collective belief governs the individual. That's how, as we've said so often, a little child can die by eating a berry. The little child didn't know the berry was poison, but the collective and universal belief says the berry's poison and the child dies. Because the greater beliefs control the minority. That's Christian Science. That's what she shows. That's what is handled by soul. Because soul, the synonymous term says, well, we'll see that how you handle it is one on God's side is a majority. That to handle those majorities' belief is to be on God's side. There, you're the master. There, that greater controls this other lesser. But we're talking always from the mental point. This is the first step, which is under this. This is why we've got to go on, because this is the claim. Or in step one, Kapler goes on to finish it. Moral consciousness is the counterfeit of the divine mind. Oh my, this, well, the gift I gave you of Kapler's book on Notes on Handling Evil will show you so clearly when you go through it. It just picks out the various references from the textbook and Mrs. Eddy's writings. How all mortal consciousness is just the counterfeit of the divine mind. And that's spiritualism. That the belief that mind can be turned into false beliefs, or spirit into matter, or soul into body, or principle into personality, or life into birth, maturity, and death, or truth into mortal consciousness of fear or hate. It's a counterfeit. It's not a counterfact. But remember, the logic of Mrs. Eddy is dual conceptional. It's a counterfeit of what is true. It's nothing that's trying to be something, and the only power it has is we make nothing something. And then it's just a seeming power. It still has no power. It only has power within its own illusion, but not within the realm of God. And finally, we see then that mortal mind and mortal consciousness is nothing. But as Kapler shows here in quoting from Mrs. Eddy, as you'll see in Notes on Handling Evil, point two, the nothingness of nothing must be understood. Mrs. Eddy makes this very clear. It's not sufficient just to admit or to believe that error is nothing. It must be understood why error is nothing. That's where she said of the second record of creation, we learn the cause of error and the effect of error, and never to believe a lie. So after we have worked with, from various sources, what is reality to the standpoint of step one? Then we say, how do I become one with this standpoint? We have to really begin to see that the universe is a mental. That's step one. One can't get on in science unless we get the metaphysics right. And the metaphysics is that the physical claim is nothing. It's in belief. That's how I become one with it. I resolve material things into thoughts. That's where Mrs. Eddy is saying, resolving things into thoughts, huh? That has to be done to see that. Don't have those things out there as reality. Don't have the claim of this disease and that disease. Don't say, oh, this is real, and now I've really got to face this thing. Resolve it into a false belief and let science handle it. But first, resolve it into a false belief. Step one, see it's mental. Then Christian Science will work. Without seeing it's mental, one is still going to believe in the drug to heal. But again, as I say, how can a drug heal a false belief? It just starts making sense, doesn't it? Then Christian Scientists are called those funny people who don't go to a doctor. Well, when we see that, what good is one belief in a drug to heal another belief in sickness? It just begins to not make any sense. It's just one error handling another error of education. But the higher practice is to resolve things into thoughts and then go after the false thought. And on this step one, then, we will see that, of course, our mentality or thoughts determine our experience. So it's not a material circumstance that has to change, but our own material thinking must change. Now, the next point in your homework, ask not only what is reality of step one, how do I become one with that reality, but what's the pitfall of step one? Why isn't step one the highest view of being? What is it within step one that makes us have to go on to a step two? That's always what we want to know. Why is there a step two? Well, because we say, if all is mental, is the mental always of the same quality? See? And we say, no, that mental sometime is good, and it's sometimes evil. And so now when I see the whole world is mental, I think, oh no, sometimes it acts for good and sometimes it acts for ill. And we have mental breakdowns. The quality of mentality, because it's sometimes good, we can have a strong, healthy mentality, but we can have a breakdown in mentality, depressions and all this type of thing. So that shows that there is another standpoint that has to be handled, and that's step two. So when you feel a bit satisfied with your work on step one, go on to step two. And here it goes on in Kapler's book on the ordered approach on page 3. Where it shows the second step, the mental can be good and evil. Well, Mrs. Eddy sure learned this in her experience. She saw that all was mind and its idea, and only practiced out from the divine mind, and downstairs with Kennedy practicing evil from the human mind standpoint. So she saw, well, I have to do something about this. There's not a real clear cut line in the field between mentality and the divine mind. So that's when she capitalized mind. She realized, I've got to show there's a difference between practicing from mind and from the divine mind. Because the mental can be good or evil. It can be used to benefit mankind, but also to go against mankind. So here we ask, what is reality to the standpoint of step two? And now in your work, you gather together your concept building. That's what step one is, always getting the letter, the exact letter. So we say, well, I could use the tree of the knowledge of good and evil as an example for step two of the mental being good and evil. Because the central question is always whether the mental is only good or only evil or both good and evil, and that it just depends on how I look at the universe, whether I have a good universe or a bad universe. So it just depends on our quality of awareness. And as we've already seen, this is where that subject comes in. If the universe or reality is wrongly perceived from the first degree of mortal mind, it appears as evil. That's looking through the dark glasses of the first record of creation. This is where that subject comes in. But if we view the universe correctly through the lens of God, from the divine mind, from the impersonal divine eye standpoint, then it appears good. So this second step is at the standpoint of the step, same as step one, from the standpoint of the human, showing that that mental is just good or evil, that that human standpoint is not reliable. That second degree, everyone is free to entertain either good or evil thoughts. And that's why, as I said in the textbook, Mrs. Eddy talks about evil thoughts, mortal thoughts, negative thoughts, or she'll talk about immortal thoughts, good thoughts, pure thoughts, showing that from that second degree, we're capable of being influenced in the mental from either standpoint. And it's, as she quotes in this textbook on page 166 concerning this standpoint, as a man thinketh, so is he. If he has a good mentality, he'll have a good experience. A bad mentality, a bad experience. Then we can go on and ask, now how can I become one with the standpoint of step two? How can I see and become one with that in my understanding on the ascending way?